Hi, I'm Jamie.
And I'm having breakfast at Uncle Mike's place in Westtown. You're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is wonderful to be here with you today for show number 973. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer today in the WGN radio studio. So hello to Bob. And on the show today, a couple of topics that are local in nature, but go way beyond where we live. The use of artificial intelligence in journalism and the issue of immigration, specifically healthcare coverage for local immigrants. These are a big deal, and here's why. In the recent quote-unquote big beautiful bill, that's a thing, that was approved by the House, there are a few things buried in that bill that are relevant to these issues we're talking about on the show today. First, deep in this bill, in section 43201C, this part of the bill intends to prevent state and local governments from enforcing or enacting AI-related laws or regulations. So in other words, we're not going to be able to regulate AI for a period of about 10 years. Look, AI isn't perfect, and sometimes it can make mistakes, thereby spreading false information. This section of the bill could result in the further spread of false information. Second, immigration. There's a lot in the bill on this topic. Here's what the Brookings Institute had to say about this part of the bill. Quote, "The current draft of the 2025 reconciliation bill contains numerous provisions targeting immigrants. These include massive enforcement spending, such as $45 billion for immigrant detention centers and another $27 billion for immigration and customs enforcement removal operations. Somewhat less attention has been given to tax and health provisions affecting immigrants living in the United States, including legal immigrants. Congress is considering limiting immigrants' access to certain tax benefits, levying an excise tax on remittances, and penalizing states that use their own funds to provide immigrant health insurance. The bill emphasizes removing benefits for unauthorized immigrants, but they are already ineligible for most federal tax benefits, despite paying nearly $60 billion in federal taxes annually. The new provisions take existing eligibility restrictions further, limiting benefits for many groups who lawfully reside in the U.S., including lawful permanent residents, individuals with temporary work visas, and refugees." End quote. So all this is the backdrop for today's show. And it goes back to something I've talked about many times before, and I'll talk about it today. The importance of recognizing our common humanity. Sometimes we need a little reminder to do that. I mean, it's easy to get caught up in our daily grind and to distance ourselves from these issues that we sometimes hear about but might not fully grasp. Sometimes we bury ourselves in our devices or we choose to ignore what's going on because we're just tired and we feel that there's nothing we can do. I get it. But whether we're talking about machines making decisions for humans or our embrace of those who are struggling, let's keep in mind our common humanity. The use of artificial intelligence, or AI, is most definitely on the rise. But with the use of this technology comes a host of ethical questions. Is it okay for AI to do things for us? Is it okay for AI to think for us? Is it okay for AI to scrape information from the internet? And remember, some of that information was created by human beings trying to earn a living. What about in journalism? Recently, it was discovered that the Chicago Sun-Times published a special entertainment section of the paper that was mostly generated by AI, and this section contained information that was false or completely made up. AI is a serious issue that we need to think about. Justin Kerr is the publisher of the McKinley Park News. That's a local news site dedicated to reporting the news and information of that Chicago neighborhood. He has been vocal in his opposition to AI in journalism, and he is here with us today to talk to us about it once again. We can check out the website, mckinleypark.news. Justin, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So you recently said, and by the way, you and I have talked about some of this stuff before, but boy, it is changing and it is moving fast. You've said that McKinley Park News is 0% AI, as you say. You've also said that, quote, the only way to be a trustworthy and ethical news outlet is to not use AI services at all, end quote. Can you explain why you feel this way when we're talking about journalism?
Well, I think it's especially pertinent for journalism because so much of the capabilities of AI have been built on what was scraped away from journalism. All of AI's capability to provide reasonable and intelligent answers that have good grammar and good wordplay. So much of that, I mean, that it's stolen from all of our knowledge, but journalism outlets are especially of value for this AI training data because we have really good content that's accurate, that's checked by humans, that you can trust. And so it's of much more value to a lot of AIs. So, of course, all of this scraping and use is being done without any permission or license. We've always had terms of service and copyright notices that expressly prohibit this sort of activity, but nobody seems to care and everyone's getting away with the theft. The exception are the really big players like the New York Times or maybe Reddit, where they have access to lawyers and resources. So they're scary enough to be able to defend their intellectual property. But so many places like the McKinley Park News are just having our, you know, livelihood scraped away.
Right. So what you're saying here in this scenario, you're working at McKinley Park News. You're trying to create this content that's all about your neighborhood. It's all original content and it's hard work. I mean, this journalism stuff is really hard work. So you put maybe some stories up on your website and then along comes AI. And when someone, you know, prompts AI with something, maybe about McKinley Park, it can look for the articles that McKinley Park News has posted and scrape that information and then try to piece together an answer using the reporting that you and your colleagues do at McKinley Park News.
Yes, and because we're really the only source for McKinley Park information, especially all of the original journalism we do, there's no other place that the AI could have gotten that information. In addition to talking about how we're 100% human and 0% AI in a recent letter from the editor, I have also posted a classified ad for our AI data, for sale, AI training data. I would be perfectly happy to license our incredibly valuable AI training data in proper context, which ensures that, you know, we're properly compensated for, you know, what we're providing, that it's not used inappropriately, that, you know, if we do license our AI data, it's used in an environmentally sound way. That's another thing that everyone has completely abandoned in the discussion about AI, especially these supposedly enlightened news outlets that are using AI. I mean, the environmental impact of AI is astonishing. It's tremendous. I mean, they're talking about, I think Mark Zuckerberg asked for nuclear regulatory authority so he could build his own nuclear plants to power AI. This results in, you know, terrible results for the environment, higher electricity prices for all of us. And nobody's talking about this. That's like an issue that's just been, woof, it's gone.
Yeah. I want to come back to this issue of what you're talking about here, possibly issuing your own training data for AI, because that's something that I think is kind of interesting here. So, I mean, how would this work? Because what you're talking about here is you want the attribution, you want the credit, you want the love, and, you know, what's owed to you, the compensation for your hard work. How would that work? How could you train AI?
Well, so we could license our training data for use in large language models that could then inform these AI chatbots. So in other words, we would be able to contribute positively to this technology and then, you know, and give it real value, because, you know, you're not going to get a good answer about McKinley Park unless you're looking at the McKinley Park News. So this would, you know, both give it value, but then it also would allow us, you know, a legal regime would allow us to control how our training data is used. Now, I don't have any customers lined up at the door. I'm not expecting any soon. But by just saying, you know, this has value and this is the context that we'd like to license it in, you know, so, for example, the ways that that could work is we could have periodic licensing to ensure that, you know, if our data is used for these profitable AI services, we get paid for it every year or every 10 years. You know, it's not just stolen forever, you know, to enrich other people forever. This could also, if we licensed our data properly, we could, you know, silo off certain areas that we say, no, you can't use this for AI training. Like, for example, our member profiles. We are a pro-privacy and pro-user publication. And, you know, under proper licensing, we could say, you know, you could use our news stories for training, but not things that we want to support or privacy that we want to support for our members. It also could allow us to help the news industry by saying, if we issue our training data, you know, it needs to be used legally and responsibly, which includes not intermixing it with other content that's been stolen, especially from other independent news outlets. And then it also, you know, even things like consideration for freelancers, you know, when we get a freelance writer to write for us, they should also have their interests represented as their content gets dumped into AI or not, or we should be able to exclude that in the licensing agreement if that's not something that we have an agreement with for our freelancers. So there's a whole bunch of like very solid reasons. I think there's a bunch of ways that it could work. I mean, the question is, you know, will people respect the fact that it needs to be legally licensed? I mean, all of the tech giants and tech bros are now saying, oh, it would kill the AI industry if we have to pay people for the stuff we've stolen. And I was like, well, you know, you could say that about any thief, right?
Right. Well, okay. So thinking about how this works, I mean, I'm not, you know, a genius when it comes to designing all this stuff, but it could work. Like, technically, what you're saying here is you could license this stuff and essentially tell AI what it's allowed to pull from and what it can't. That technology exists?
Oh, of course. Why not? Why wouldn't it? I mean, you could assign whatever type of database dump or authorized access and use for AI and say, these are the specific ranges of URLs that, you know, you are allowed to use, or these are the specific, you know, this is the specific tranche of content that I am willing to license for this purpose. Maybe I don't want to license all of it, or maybe I want to have certain conditions for parts of it and not for others. As the owner of that intellectual property, that should be my decision. That should be a legal thing and not something that's just stolen and everybody shrugs their shoulders and say, well, everybody's stealing, so we may as well steal too.
Yeah. You know, what we're talking about here, obviously the gathering of information, and that is significant. And what you're talking about as a small local news organization, you know, this AI is taking your work and incorporating it into the answers. But the thing about AI, and you've spoken about this before, is that, you know, it's not relatively smart. I mean, yes, it's getting more advanced and it's starting to make decisions on things, but it doesn't always make the right decisions. It isn't 100% accurate. It doesn't have ethical considerations. It can't always tell what is legitimate news and what isn't. So, I mean, this, I think, factors into what we're saying here, because not only is it taking the information that a site like yours puts out, but it might not be packaging it or using it in an ethical way or a correct way, which that just blows my mind when I think about it like that.
Oh yeah, it confidently lies to you. AI will never tell you when it thinks it's wrong, or I'm really not sure, or AI will, because it's profitable in that way, AI will always give you the answer or an answer, no matter whether or not it's right or not. And I think that shows, I made a decision a while ago not to use AI because we're victims of AI. And by using AI, I would be perpetuating that theft. But now I guess some thoughts have crystallized around it, but you just can't trust it. And you can't trust any news that is generated by AI, because who knows where that source is coming from? Who knows if it's real or not? It can be confidently stated, but it's, it could be just garbage like that Sun-Times stuff. I'm extremely concerned in terms of other types of systems too, where AI adoption is just going crazy. They're going to cut the human out of it entirely, and the profitable bureaucrats are going to say, well, that's what the AI says, so it must be real, right?
Yeah. So, I'm thinking about just us as a society, and look, technology has arguably made our lives easier. I think that's a pretty solid argument. In some ways easier, in some ways scarier and stranger, but I think there has been progress in terms of, the things that we have put together using our ingenuity here, right? So one of the arguments is that, well, AI is kind of along that same sort of trajectory of progress here. But I want to ask you, do you see any sort of good use of artificial intelligence when it comes to journalism? Is there something that we could possibly use it for right now, understanding that this stuff is evolving and changing? But where are we now? Is there something that we could say, yeah, you know what? We might be able to use it applied to fill in the blank.
So I think that potential exists, but not the way things currently are set up right now. One of the biggest issues regarding it is theft, and then how that leads to these giant piles of unknowable information. I wrote a little bit about how perhaps the news industry might collaborate on all of our well-qualified, trustworthy content, and provide our own set of AI training data that we can know at least is coming from legitimate and ethical sources, and also trustworthy information. So that might be one way that it is used appropriately. Another way might be where I do find a customer for licensing our AI data, and that customer will say, okay, we're going to use it according to the terms of your licensing agreement, and that incorporates the ethical concerns. And we're offsetting our extra use for AI with, green energy generation or things like that. Specifically, as a local news producer, I absolutely envision scenarios where I could, point the AI at the City of Chicago data and say, okay, instead of me going through and copy editing the building permits and crime reports and notable arrests, well, I'll train the AI on how I've done that and then let the AI do it. The real issue is there's no accessible source for, that isn't built on stolen content. And then, also talking about whether or not it can be trusted, unless you're very technically sophisticated and well-resourced, you're always going to be using someone else's AI. You're always going to be using someone else's AI service that was built who knows how from who knows what. We know that these services are now being manipulated, such as Twitter's Grok AI, to provide specific types of answers and data based on political leanings and partisan interests. So, that's if it's all your own AI and you can trust it, okay, then maybe. But all of the AIs provided by these greasy, tech companies and these shysters, I can't trust them. And I don't think that they're appropriate for journalism at all.
And also, just kind of piggybacking off of that, when people are asking AI sensitive questions, maybe about work or their personal life, I'm just thinking, who's on the other end of this AI here? What's the artificial intelligence thinking? Is it just gathering up all this information about this person and the security questions that they're asking or the issues in their personal life? I just feel like you're putting stuff out into the ether that it could just kind of take in and then use that as more of the basis for searching for answers when, yep. again, I think of it like that, it's kind of terrifying.
Oh, it is. I mean, the AI, any interaction that you have with an AI, your interaction becomes part of the AI. You're training the AI and helping the AI by interacting with it. And also, you know, I know that there are certain business use scenarios where they say, oh, we have safeguards and protections in place to ensure that your sensitive business data won't leak out through our service. But that's total crap. I mean, there's all sorts of exploits going on. They can't even, you know, the data scientists don't even really know exactly how the AI itself works. They can't really explain, like, you know, a chain of events that leads to an answer, for example. So I think that, you know, from a privacy and security standpoint, anyone who interacts with AI is taking a gigantic risk, because even if that AI may have best practices for security, it's still going to be a giant target for hackers. And everybody's always going to be trying to get access to the same, you know, master knowledge base that knows everything about everyone, which apparently, you know, the United States is building with Palantir and the Trump administration and all that stuff. So that's a big AI thing, too.
Yeah. And we don't seem to be in a hurry to regulate this thing right now. So that's interesting. And thinking about, like I mentioned before, the Sun Times incident here with AI and what happened there. Okay, that's you know, pretty substantial, because we look at the Sun Times as this, you know, institution in Chicago, and it was guilty of just making stuff up using AI. So journalism in general, I mean, you've been talking about this issue of AI for a while now, but in terms of where we're at here, just looking at the profession, are other outlets speaking up? Are they voicing some of the same concerns that you are? Are we maybe sounding, I don't know if sounding the alarm is the right phrase, or just saying, hey, we should take a look at this thing. What's going on with journalism writ large?
Well, so I think you'd see mainstream media, you know, has kind of stopped serving audiences and treats audiences as product. And I see that their decisions to fire staff and replace them with AI. I think it was Financial Times just had another an announcement recently about that. But you know, that's management, that's big business management saying we're going to do whatever we can to cut headcount, increase profitability, and we don't care if our product is crap as long as people continue to buy it. And for news, you know, there's hardly any choices in news anymore. So it's, right, you know, easier for them to do that sort of stuff. I think the smaller players are a lot more concerned, and like independent publishing platforms like Substack and things like that, they're also getting all of their stuff scraped and stolen away. It's been extremely disappointing and unfortunate that the supposed leaders of the journalism industry at places like Medill and Press Forward have also adopted, you know, AI use and AI theft, you know, without speaking to any of these ethical issues at all. You know, it's just they're a bunch of academics and nonprofit industrial complex professionals who are, you know, taking part in the gold rush, and they don't care about journalism and they don't care about news audiences either. You know, they're just saying, hey, AI is great. Here's how you use it in your newsroom. Oh, it's built on stolen goods. Oh, don't tell me about that. You know, they don't want to hear any objections, and they will never answer to any of those objections. And I don't think any, like, I've never seen or heard any news outlets speak to this. I think that we're one of the first, or the first that I know of, to say we are 100% human and 0% AI for these reasons. And, you know, I don't even see it addressed. You know, they're burying the topic.
Yeah. Well, look, we should be talking about it. This is a big deal, and, you know, the genie is out of the bottle here, so to speak, with AI. So we have to figure out a world where this is a thing. And look, I'm all for preserving humanity and the creativity. Yeah, yeah. You know, let's just be on the side of humanity. I think that's a basic thing I think we can all agree on. But this is something that you will continue to think about. We should all be thinking about it, the use of AI in journalism. And we can check out your website, mckinleypark.news, for the McKinley Park News. That's a local news site dedicated to reporting what's going on in the McKinley Park neighborhood. And Justin Kerr is the publisher of that outlet. Hey, Justin, I always appreciate the time, and thanks for the conversation today.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure to talk about this stuff, to get these ideas out there, and I really appreciate your support and your focus and, like, bringing these ideas to light and talking about some things that, you know, people just aren't talking about.
important topics in our country right now are immigration and healthcare. And we might think of these issues as separate, but there is definitely an intersection here. Low-income immigrant adults in Illinois pay taxes, work essential jobs, they raise family in this state. However, they are ineligible for Medicaid due to their immigration status. That's where the Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults program comes in. It's also known as the HBIA program. This program provides state-funded health coverage for about 33,000 people. This week, it was announced that the Illinois General Assembly decided to eliminate funding for this program, ending health care for these 33,000 individuals. Endy Almanord is the director of the Healthy Illinois Campaign. That's a nonpartisan statewide coalition working to support quality and affordable health care access for all Illinois residents, regardless of immigration status. The website is healthyillinoiscampaign.org, and Endy Almanord is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Endy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So this program, I mean, it just sounds incredibly important here. So give us a little bit more context here about what this program does and how it helps those who are paying into the system, but they can't really get a lot out because of their immigration status. How has this program been successful?
Yeah, so the HBIA program, like you said, right now is allowing about 33,000 individuals across Illinois to have access to comprehensive healthcare coverage. So basically what Medicaid would offer, but these individuals are not eligible for Medicaid solely due to their immigration status. So this includes specialty care, primary care, medication, access to vision and dental services, mental health services, really everything that Medicaid covers with the exception of long-term care. Because of this program, individuals that have been able to benefit from it, many of them, this is the first time this program has allowed them to go to the doctor for the first time, has given them access to preventative care. Many of them have been diagnosed and treated for different illnesses like diabetes, cancer, kidney failure. And so, I mean, this program has been life-changing and life-saving for many of the individuals who have who currently have this program, though it will be ending in about a month now on June 30th.
Yeah. So, I mean, the impact of that, you just talked about how some of these folks have gone to the doctor for the first time. Mm-hmm. They're getting basic checkups, stuff that maybe a lot of us take for granted. So in ending this program, what we could see happen, obviously the health of these folks could be impacted, but there's more of a ripple effect, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, yeah, their health will be impacted, but what we'll also see is we'll see more individuals waiting to go to the emergency room instead of being able to go to a primary care physician to be able to treat different illnesses. And so if somebody would have to wait until their illness is dire and go to the emergency room in order to get care, which actually would end up costing our state and taxpayers more to be able to pay for the cost of the emergency room care and then put somebody in a situation where their condition has to get severe before they're able to actually get care. And so we all feel the impact of that financially, and then also just the individual having to be put in that position as well.
So in terms of why this is happening, I said the Illinois General Assembly decided to eliminate funding for this program. This seems like it would be a pretty popular thing. And, you know, I'm thinking about why this is happening here. And there was a University of Chicago study that said this HBIA program accounted for 0.07% of the state's healthcare budget. So not even 1%. So is this, you know, in terms of why this is happening, is it a financial reason or is something else going on here?
I think we're in a really unique climate in our state and across the country when it comes to immigrant issues. And so I think that this program was looked at, and despite the need, despite the cost savings, despite the impact that it's had on immigrant communities in the state, unfortunately, our legislators made the decision to cut this program. I think in many ways, unfortunately, capitulating to maybe some of what the federal administration wanted to see happen in immigrant communities across the country. And so I know, too, that there have been different threats to FMAP or to federal funding to Medicaid to states that provide immigrants with healthcare coverage. And so I think that that may have been part of the calculus there, but something that we continue to remind legislators in Springfield before this decision was made was that, I mean, we still have time to find ways to protect our community. Those threats wouldn't materialize until 2027, which would give us the opportunity to push back legally, and to find other ways to be able to, you know, protect this community so that they wouldn't have to experience a loss of their healthcare coverage, a pause in being able to access treatment, and definite pause in being able to access treatment for chronic illnesses. And so I think that there are different things that legislators may have considered, but ultimately, I mean, the Healthy Illinois Coalition is extremely disappointed at the choice that was made to eventually cut this program. But I think regardless of what calculus was made, overall, I mean, we believe that everybody deserves access to healthcare, and we think it's extremely disappointing that folks are now getting their healthcare taken away.
And, you know, I agree with that. And I think it's something to think about because the General Assembly is dominated by Democrats. And so they have more votes than Republicans. And they have historically, you know, in recent times been sort of more pro-immigration and on a certain side of this issue, but we still see what we see here. And, you know, going back to what you said, I think this is just such a humanity issue, and it often gets conflated with a security issue. You know, like we talk about the border and the security of the border, and I think we all want a secure border, but we tend to conflate that security issue with, well, okay, there are immigrants here, so isn't there something insecure about that? At least that's the current narrative. And that plus the kind of, you know, what's mine is mine because I'm from here, and the narrative that jobs are being stolen or resources are being diverted. But really what we're talking about here, 0.07% of people who are putting into the system. It's not like they're, you know, not doing anything. They're working. They're doing a lot of these jobs that not a lot of other folks would want to do. So in your work, I know that's something you've really been focusing on is the humanity here. And I just feel like it's necessary to remind people that we're talking about human beings. And, you know, there is plenty to go around, I feel like. And yet we see what we see here. So when you do this work, thinking about that humanity issue, how do you sort of put that at the forefront here, prioritize that, and make sure we remind folks that it's about people?
Yeah, so a really big part of the advocacy that the coalition has done over the last several months has been collecting stories from our community who are impacted by this and sharing those stories with legislators and sharing those stories with the community broadly. And so, I mean, it's, you know, we read those stories and they're from people, and it's individuals who are saying, yeah, well, my Parkinson's medication costs $900 and I would not be able to afford it if not for this program. And if this program gets cut, I'm going to have to decide between eating and paying rent and paying for my medication. Or individuals who are undergoing cancer treatment right now who have absolutely no idea how that cancer treatment is going to continue after June 30th. There are people who have diabetes who have had to share their insulin with their neighbors because they couldn't afford it. And it's only because of their program that they're now able to have that lifeline. And so those stories have been extremely important, just being able to make sure that our decision makers understand that this is not just a number, this is not just a line item that's being taken away from the budget, but it's actual lives of people that will be lost as a result of the loss of this program.
So in terms of what you're doing at the Healthy Illinois campaign, how are you going forward here in the wake of this decision? How are you continuing your advocacy work, and what will you be working on in the coming months to draw attention to this HBIA defunding in Illinois?
Yeah, I think something that's going to be incredibly important, first and foremost, is just to make sure that the members of our community that are going to lose this healthcare coverage program at the end of this month, like, are taking care of us as best we can. You know, this is going to be an incredible loss. And so we want to make sure that our community is supported as best we can with whatever resources we're able to find, which will absolutely not meet the need that's going to present itself. And then as far as our advocacy goes, I think one thing that we are really going to make sure we focus on is there's a a parallel program, HBIS, for seniors. We've essentially gotten commitments from legislators, from the governor's office in Illinois, that that program won't be touched. And so we will make sure that we are holding them to that, so that our most vulnerable members of our immigrant community continue to have access to their health care. In addition to that, we want to make sure that we want HBIA to be reopened for funds to be put back into that. And so depending on what things look like, there are rumors of a potential summer session. So that being an opportunity for us to continue those conversations with legislators and to continue that advocacy. Really just trying to figure out and see what we can do to make healthcare accessible to this population again. And then Healthy Illinois has always been focused on expanding healthcare coverage access to everyone, regardless of their immigration status. And so that'll always be our North Star. And so as we, you know, continue to fight to get HBIA back, fight to make sure that HBIS stays put, we'll always be trying to be creative about what we can do to make sure that everybody has healthcare coverage.
So, all right, we can go to healthyillinoiscampaign.org. That's the website for the Healthy Illinois Campaign. It's a nonpartisan statewide coalition working to support quality and affordable healthcare access for all Illinois residents, regardless of immigration status. We've been talking about the Illinois General Assembly's decision to essentially defund the Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults program that was helping about 33,000 people here in Illinois. And I know that the fight for these rights and basic humanity continues. So, Endy, I thank you so much for joining us today. Endy Almanord is the director of the Healthy Illinois Campaign. Thanks for all of your work, Endy. I know you've got a lot more to do here, so I appreciate your time and best of luck going forward.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
And that'll do it. Outside the Loop, show number 973 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. As always, we say thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering help in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.